would have it all ready to go. It's easy to lose focus, you know, like a dog in a room full of squirrels, somebody told me last night. Did you notice in that chapter that we just read in 61, verse 4, and they shall build, and obviously, you know, this is the time of the kingdom, and they shall build the old wastes. They shall raise up the former desolations, and they shall repair the waste cities, the desolations of many generations. That was four expressions in regard to ruins that we really saw when we went over to Israel and Jordan. And what the prophecy is saying to me is that these old wastes that we saw, they're going to be raising up former desolations. All of these things that tourists go through today over in the Holy Land and look at, and they're just, and you're going to see that they're just rubble and ruin. You've seen one, you almost seen them all. But in reality, when you read that and look back at chapter 58 in verse 12, the same thing. It says, and they that shall be of thee shall build the old waste places. Thou shalt raise up the foundations of many generations. And thou shalt be called the repairer of the breach, the restorer of paths to dwell in. Why would God take these old tells that are nothing but mounds of dirt now, layer upon layer after hundreds and centuries and thousands of years, and rebuild those old cities like Sodom? Think about that for me, and give me an answer. Because as we go through these slides, it's really quite amazing. When we got the invitation back, I think it was in April of 2011 from Brother Frank, and I'm sure many of you got the same email invitation, and it says, we're trying to put together a trip to the Holy Land through a university in New Mexico, and we'd like to fill the bus up with Christadelphians. So if you're interested, write us or call us. And we had just retired, and our finances enabled us to do this. And Brother Dave Phillips, many of you who know him, also went along with us. But when I saw the first 2 days of the itinerary, I said, this is going to be an unbelievable trip. Just the first 2 days. And then I was grabbing the phone to call Uncle Frank. And because I could see from just the first 2 days that this trip was going to be amazing. And it truly exceeded my wildest expectations. You know, you go through life and you hear people going to the Holy Land. You see it on television, going to the trips to the Holy Land. See it on the internet. And you talk to relatives and friends. You see slides from the Logos tours that go over. And you hear all about it. And then all of a sudden, it's sort of like, bam, you've got the decision to make to go or not. And you go, and it's the most amazing thing that you seem like you've ever done in your life. Really, it was just... I'll try to stop talking and start showing. But this trip ended up with five archaeologists on it. And one of them was Dr. Stephen Collins, who was of the University of, I think it's Trinity Southwest University in Arizona. And they put it on because Dr. Collins has a team of researchers going over to the site of Sodom and Gomorrah fame. And it's not the old idea that it's down in the southern part of the Dead Sea that's underneath the waters of the Dead Sea. You can just kind of wipe that idea completely out of your mind because it ain't anywhere near Sodom. Guarantee it. And when you hear and see what this man has done over the past 7-8 years, you'll know what I'm talking about. And I wish I could be able to tell you that, but I'm going to only be able to show you a few slides because we hit so many areas. We went to Amman first, and we departed. Left Houston at 5:15 on October 30th, arrived in London, bounced on over to Amman, and a total of 18 hours and 15 minutes for the trip from Houston to Amman with a short layover. And there's Uncle Dave and Wendy loading up Continental, and there's the flight. It kind of flies over this way. I'm going to blast through these. And it was long flight, but we got to Amman in the evening, and they don't restrict smoking in the in public areas like airports. I mean, really, we landed at the Queen Aliyah International Airport. I believe Queen Aliyah is the wife of the Jordanian president, and in Amman. And so there, you know, smoking is allowed in the public places. And it was like, and you finally get your bags off of the carousel and try to get out of there while the firemen are coming in. So in Jordan, it's really an amazing part, because you know Jordan, just on the other side of the Jordan River from Israel, is the land that God has promised, part of the land that God has promised to Israel and Abraham and Isaac and Jacob and Reuben and Manasseh. It inherited part of that land, the half tribe. Was it Reuben and Gad and the half tribe of Manasseh that they promised that they stayed on the land, and after going back over with the children of Israel over into the western part of Israel on the western side of the Jordan. But this is Dr. Collins. And we catch a shuttle bus ride from the hotel down, or from the airport down to the hotel. It took us about 45 minutes to an hour to get there. And he gave us sort of a nightly narration on the bus, on the little shuttle bus here. This is the shuttle bus, not the tour bus. We stayed at the Mövenpick Resort and Spa, which was on the shores of the Dead Sea. And that, of course, is on the western side of the Dead Sea, eastern side of the Dead Sea over here. And this is Israel. This is the Jordan River. Amman is here. The airport is here. We drive up this little blue area and about an hour's drive down to the Mövenpick, which is a Swiss hotel chain. And they got them all over the world. And I felt like a fish out of water. That is not what we can spend money on. You know, we're pretty frugal, Wendy and I, especially her. But It really was a nice five-star hotel, and we didn't take advantage of all the amenities. Like, I don't think Wendy got a massage unless she did it out, you know, without me knowing it. I don't know. She didn't, but it was a nice hotel, and we're just going to blast through a few of the slides. Everybody enjoyed it. We had 27 Christadelphians on the bus and about 13 others from other denominations. I may have mentioned that. So this is kind of just a keyhole view of that hotel, nicely landscaped. I think it's been there about maybe 7-8 years. It's new. It covers a lot of territory. We won't go into that one. That's actually a digital brochure. If you ever want to bring it up, it's called Mövenpick on the Dead Sea. It's really a fancy illustration and ad, because it's like a book. You start going through it, and it shows all the hotel rooms and things like that. So if you're ever interested, that's the lobby. We got there kind of late, but we got a room, and Wendy's drinking again. I can't keep that lady in line. I just can't take her out. This guy is selling a drink. I don't think it's alcoholic, to be honest, really. And so anyway, there's Dave and Myra Lucky from British Columbia. As many of you might have known her, she was on the trip, as well as a number of you. Is there anybody in here that was on this trip that I might have just not recognized that was on the trip? That's easy for me to do sometimes, but it was just really delightful. We got to catch up with a lot of brothers and sisters that we had seen in various places at different Bible schools. That's just one of the refreshments or dessert stand. I love desserts, but, you know, that's fruit and things like that. Now, this is the outside. You can see the Dead Sea in the back here. And that's the Israeli side on the other side over there. And this is, of course, on the Jordanian side. Just a few pictures of the hotel. And the first thing I did, we got there, it was like maybe 12 o'clock at night, maybe 11 when we got to the hotel, got our bags up, checked in. Wendy went to bed and I went to the Dead Sea. I just took off down the road, down the little golf cart path. I wanted to see the Dead Sea. That was the first thing on my mind, and I went, and there wasn't anybody out there. I mean, none of the gardeners, there wasn't any hotel personnel or staff anywhere. And I was walking amongst all the oleander landscaping and lights along the walls, and I bet I walked for 200 yards, 300 yards or more. and had to be at least a quarter mile from the hotel to the sea, the shore of the Dead Sea. And I got down there and I walked down that little ramp right here. I had some steps and walked down to the sandy area and then walked further, and then it took another ramp down past the rocks that were covered in crusty salt. And finally I got down there, and it's dark, but you can still see, and I walked down there, and I kneeled down, and I put my finger in the Dead Sea, and I went, oh! And it's not salty, it's just like putting your finger, how many of you have ever put your finger in your battery when you take off the caps? And you put your finger in the battery water, and you never done that? It's nasty. It's chemicals. It's not, when they talk about salt, thick salt, they're talking about chemical salts. This is mineral stuff in this water. And it is so thick that you cannot sink. And you've heard that. And you've seen people who have been floating in the Dead Sea and they can't sink. And it's really true. Your body density won't sink because of the water density. But anyway, I went back to the hotel and got to bed okay. But I just wanted to do that. I wanted to touch the Dead Sea to be sure I was in the right place, because you never know. People can tell you you're going to the Holy Land, but today you just don't know till you're there, and you can put your finger in the Dead Sea. They have lots of special effects today. I don't know about every. I might not even been off the airplane. I don't know. You just don't know. So, but anyway, we got off to a roaring start. This is the sunset over the Dead Sea. We come back twice to this hotel after going to different places in the Holy Land. And this, again, is another place. That's Wendy going down the steps. This is actually a shot later on because that next morning from the time we got there, we took a day trip, which we'll look at in a minute. Now, again, there's some shots of the Dead Sea, and these rocks are just covered with salt, crusty salt, and it's really, really ugly looking place along the shores. The following day, this was not part of the tour, but the early birds, those arriving one day early, took a short road trip over to the town of Madaba. That was going to be a little quiz, but I'm not going to quiz you. As a matter of fact, I do have a quiz for you. I can pass these out later if y'all want to do that, and you can look at them and take them with you. There's three pages. I would only quiz you on one after the end of the slideshow, but you can have them and fill them in, and they might help you later in your Bible studies, because I've got a map that's got the places that we visited in Numbers, and we didn't cover all these places, but we covered quite a few of them. And then I've got the little quiz that I can hand you out that would, yeah, that'd be good if you want to do that, Craig. And Wendy, I think that box of quizzes is under my chair. If you do that, if you grab those, one of those goes with one of these. And I hope we have enough in that box. And so only the first page is what you'd be tested on if you were taking a quiz test after this presentation. So I don't want you to feel like that you have to, but we'll go over the answers if we have time. No, give them all the whole stapled. There's a stapled. Yeah, they are stapled somewhere. Aren't they? Yeah, they're stapled. Let me just separate the ones that are not. Here we go. There we go. Would you hand out, please? Thank you. Okay, let's go. Madaba is actually spelled in the Bible Madiba, and many of you have heard that city of Madiba. It was one of them that was taken over by the children of Israel under Moses during that after the Exodus, and they came up through the land of Edom and Moab, and that's where those lands were actually possessed by the Edomites and the Moabites and the Ammonites. And Madaba is that city that's located on the map here, right here, and you'll see a few other cities. So what we're going to do is just take a tour up through Madiba or Madaba and come back down, and we'll show you maps as we go along. This is Madaba is known for the earliest settlement of Christians, and it has a Greek Orthodox basilica called St. George in Madaba, or Madiba, and it's called the Church of the Map. And the reason it is because many centuries ago, the first settlement, this church, when it was constructed, actually had maps, a map built into or laid like the atrium floor of the Northwood Institute Hotel where the Bible school, Midwest Bible School, was held. Remember the story about the Italian family, those of you who've ever visited, and they laid that entire floor with those little tessera or tiles, little fired clay tiles. Well, they did the same thing here. This whole town is known for making pictures out of broken tiles or square tiles and the selling them, from little coasters you can put your coffee on to massive tabletops made out of tile. That's their claim to fame. And the map is the earliest known map of Jerusalem and Israel known. And it's in the floor of this church right here. So that circle represents where Jerusalem, the city of Jerusalem, and all of these Greek names in this map. And here you can see the embodiment or the representation of the Dead Sea. And in the Dead Sea are boats, fishing boats. So it seems to indicate that there was some fishing going on at some time in the ages a long time ago. I mean, it implies it. It doesn't seem to prove it. But they had, and here's the Jordan River that goes up to this area. And so it's really interesting that this church had that map, because this church, actually, the settlement dates back to 415 and the period of Constantine. Mosaic is misspelled. Sorry about that. Mosaic map of Jerusalem, and that's actually the picture that I had circled earlier. So it's really interesting how all these tiny, tiny little tiles were laid in, and that has just remained after probably 1,000 years, that map. And this is one way to get ahead in Jordan. Can you see that? Oh, well, thought that was funny. It's an ox head hanging by itself, no ox behind it. So, you know, and that's a butcher shop. This is his body. This is his back loin. This is his head. And so, anyway, this was orientation evening with Dr. Collins. We filled up a little, a part of a theater there that we introduced ourselves to one another. And Dr. Collins introduced us and told us what to do, what not to do. Don't be complimenting the Arab people on anything or they'll give it to you. He ended up with a real heavy coat because he complimented some fellow over in Jordan, and the guy took it off and said, "Here, it's yours, and you can't refuse or you insult them." And we had, excuse me, one sister, Becky Nagel, who was sitting next to Wendy at Petra, and there was a little cat came up, and she said, "Oh, what a lovely little cat," to the owner, and, "It's your cat." And Becky went, "Uh-oh." So she probably insulted the owner because she said, "I cannot take that cat home. There's just no way." So anyway, and here's the map, right? So all of these little areas, I should have had this on there for you, but they are on your other sheet. So on the sheet in the front, you'll see all of these cities are numbered, and from Mount Hermon all the way down. Now most of these places we did visit. We didn't see Lot's Cave, and there were several that we did not get a chance. We didn't see Jericho, but there most of them we did, and it was really a whirlwind trip. I mean, we would stop at these places, and sometimes, like Dibon, we would just sit on the bus and look at the ruins, because the ruins were just kind of a pile of rubble, and there wasn't a whole lot there. But the thing about these archaeologists was that they were making sure that if anybody mentioned a certain site, that they would say, "Well, no, that's a counterfeit site. That's just for tourists who don't know and who will pay the money just to hear a story about a particular Bible site, but it's not a real site." And these archaeologists, and one of which was Brother Lane Rittmeyer. I don't know how many of you know that he is a brother from Wales. and that he is a published archaeologist, the way Dr. Collins was. And Brother Lane has published a considerable amount of material and was actually the instrumental in finding the site of Solomon's temple and the outline of the temple, which is called the Temple Mount. And that was his baby. He really wanted to get us up there, but unfortunately we did not get to go to the Temple Mount. And, well, we went. Matter of fact, we went twice. But because of an Arab holiday lasting 4 days, the Arabs shut the door just as we got to the gate. They said, no more visitors today. So we had a full schedule, and so if we couldn't get in that day, we just didn't get in. But on your first sheet, all those names on your first sheet match all the descriptions on that same sheet. So the sheets don't mix up. So the second sheet, all the names and all the descriptions match on the second sheet, and so on the third. So if you want to fill them in while we go, if not, we can look at the answers later afterwards, see if you get them right. From Mount Hermon and Dan and Caesarea Philippi, Hazor, Gamala, Tiberias, Capernaum, Chorazin, Bethsaida, Kersi, Sepphoris, Nazareth, Mount Tabor, Mount Carmel, Megiddo. All of these fit some one of these. All of these descriptions match one of these names over here. So you can read like a flourishing city of Galilee situated on the western shore of the Sea of Galilee or Lake of Gennesaret near the place where the Jordan flows into the lake. And means village of comfort, kafar, of Nahum. And how many know what that is? We'll just use that as a test. I mean, that number four was a city of Galilee, and Jesus loved that place. And what would you say it was? You got a really good hint on that one. Village of comfort, Kafar Nahum. And Nahum, who was Nahum in the Bible? What prophet? Nahum, exactly. So Kafar Nahum. Capernaum. Capernaum, that's what it is. So Capernaum, you would take the number seven and put it right there beside the four, and number seven would be a match. You could draw a line if you don't want to just put the numbers. You can just draw from Capernaum to four. But anyway, that's kind of how it goes. And you're free to do with it whatever you want to do. And so it, again, matches on your map. You see number seven, and it should show on the map, it should show you where Capernaum is. Okay? So going to skip that. We're going to go to day three. Now, this is actually, this is where we start the tour, Transjordan Highlands. Transjordan simply means across the Jordan River from Israel. So you're actually looking across the Jordan into the Transjordan Highlands. And we're going to go to Mount Nebo, Heshbon, Aroer, Aroer, Dibon, Machaerus, and stay overnight in another Mövenpick hotel down in Petra. And so we're going to try to go through that. We're only going to be able to do Jordan, I'm sorry, tonight, and hopefully we'll get through Jordan. But there is a lot to see in Jordan. A lot has happened in the nation of Jordan. Most slides, when you hear somebody go through the slides of the Holy Land, they usually take you straight to Jerusalem and everything in Israel. I don't know how many of you have ever seen anything in Jordan, but Jordan is really an interesting country, because if you compare Jordan to Israel, Israel is just almost blossoming and green compared to Jordan. Jordan is barren, it's desolate, it's trashy. I mean, the highway, the King's Highway that you read about in Scripture, we actually drove on that, but it's littered with plastic bags. There's enough plastic bags on the shoulder of the King's Highway to probably build 20,000 plastic cars. It's just amazing. And it's just unfortunate. It's just a sad state. It's like nobody wants to clean it up. You know, they should have a highway litter campaign going or something. This is our tour bus, and we were on and off it, of course. And we, on this day of our trip from Madiba, actually we covered, like I said, Madiba the first day and then went back to the hotel. Then the next day we started the tour. And that's when we headed up to Mount Nebo. This is driving through the landscape of Jordan. And this is sort of the suburban homes of Jordanians, and mostly they're made of cinder block, concrete, and rebar. They're flat roofed and mostly projecting. A lot of them, you'd be amazed at how many have steel rebar sticking up out of the roof at certain beams, at certain critical points of the roof. And when I asked about it, they said, well, they just may extend their houses, and everybody seems to relish the idea that they're going to keep building up. And it's like everybody has that. I found it an odd situation. And so we're driving through the Transjordan Highlands, and they let me off to take a picture, but they took off and left me behind. No, I'm just kidding. They didn't really. They did later in Amman. Wendy and I had to chase the bus down. They thought, no, they finally had a change of heart and said, we can't leave those two Texans back here in Amman. So they slowed the bus down and we got to get on the bus and come home. These are Bedouin homes as it was in Abraham's day, right out there in the land. They had them. We were over at the Arnon Gorge at one point and taking pictures. I don't think I have the picture, but it was they had the door open and three or four little half-naked kids were there, and they had a donkey that was just staggering. He was about to go down. I think he actually did go down before we left and died. But he was kicking up a bunch of dust, and I kind of thought he was just taking a dust bath, you know, like elephants do. But somebody said, no, he was on his last leg. But the tent that he belonged to, the Bedouin family, actually, they had the flap pulled back, and there was a television glowing inside of there. I thought, now that's strange. And it really was, a television glowing on the inside of this Bedouin tent. I'm sure Abraham would have been surprised at that. The Jordanian army troops guard the water lines that traverse the countryside from the high places. So this was just taken from the bus as we drove by, but they really did. They were serious because there were so many attempts by Jordanians to steal water off these main lines, these water lines. So again, we're back to day three. That must be I'm showing you where Mount Nebo is. This is where we're going to Mount Nebo on this map. So that's Jordanian flag, and there's only two places to cross from Jordan to Israel, and that is in Jericho and Jerash, J-E-R-A-S-H, and I don't think that one's on the first page. It might be on the second, but Jerash and Jericho are the only two border crossings from Israel into Jordan. And so in Deuteronomy chapter 4, verse 45, these are the testimonies of the statutes and judgments which Moses spake unto the children of Israel after they came forth out of Egypt. On this side Jordan, in the valley over against Beth Peor, in the land of Sihon, king of the Amorites, who dwelt at Heshbon, whom Moses and the children of Israel smote after they were come forth out of Egypt. And they possessed his land in the land of Og, king of Bashan, and the two kings of the Amorites, which were on this side Jordan toward the sun rising, from Aroer, A-R-O-E-R, from Aroer, verse 48, which is by the bank of the river Arnon, even unto Mount Sihon, which is Hermon. And all the plain on this side Jordan eastward, even under the sea of the plain, under the springs of Pisgah. So we're going to look at Arnon, the city of Aroer. And you'll notice that on number 34, we see Mount Nebo, which is where we're going first. So a view of Mount Nebo as we're coming up the road is on top of this mount. This is where Moses looked out and saw the land. And these are a few of the slides and the view that he would have seen from Mount Nebo. Okay? There's our guide, and this is a Jordanian archaeologist who worked for the Hashemite or Jordanian government, and that's George. And this is Dr. Collins, and this is Ruth and Matt Bittinger. Some of you may remember them, and Mike, and what's Frank's daughter's name? Sharon, thank you. And they were on the trip. And this is a little map, steel map, that while you're up on that hill, that rise, you can look out and see the cities of this line. If you're faced that direction, you see Nablus, this one Jericho, Ramallah, Jerusalem, and the Mount of Olives is that straight out direction. Qumran, Bethlehem, Herodium, and Hebron. So that sort of is a map. And this gives you the, in kilometers, the distance in kilometers below that. This is Brother Carl and Sister Jan from, I can't remember the last names, from Australia. They had just been on a three-week tour of the Greek islands and the Greek sites, archaeological sites of the New Testament. And they were really doing well. Here's a rolling stone, not Mick Jagger, but a rolling stone. Looks sort of about as old as Mick Jagger looks today. Used as a fortified door of a Byzantine monastery in the old village of Pharsalia, once known Ascafer Abu Bad. That's what it's called, Abu Bad. That's the name of the stone. Abu was, wasn't that Aladdin's monkey? It was. Abu Bad, Bad Abu. Heshbon, Tal Hasban. So when you talk about a tall, it's the same thing as a tell, and most of us knew it as a tell, but they call it a tall, which is, I think, the more of an Arabic term, and you can see the Arabic language on that sign. And so we're going to Tal Heshbon. So this is Heshbon, or Hezbon, and it's located in, do you right? Let's see, Tal Hasban. Let's find it. That's wrong. That's Mount Nebo. I didn't change that. So Heshbon is over here, right? It's somebody help me. Nope. I don't think it's on here, is it? Nope. It's not on here. That's one of the one places. This tour took us off the beaten path of most tourists. So Heshbon's not on here. I'm sorry. But it was an interesting site. It did have some really amazing looking ruins, and a lot of them were Byzantine. And as it brings out, and I won't go in through them, but that period of it was called a Byzantine ecclesiastical or religious center in A.D. 324 to 661. So when Constantine was ruling. And his mother was going around pointing out sites like, well, I think this Mount Sinai, this mountain must be Mount Sinai, and thus and thus and thus and thus. The archaeologists now today have researched things and verified whether she was right or wrong. In most cases, she was wrong. But this is Heshbon, and let's just take a quick look at that. In Numbers 21, 25 through 34, it's used six times. You can see some of the Byzantine columns and things from it. To date it all the way back to Moses, there's probably levels of dirt and ruins on top, because they built on top of the old ruins of a city. If they wanted to continue to build a city, they would just build it over the ruins of a previous city. That did not happen to Sodom. When Sodom was wiped out catastrophically from the Genesis account, they didn't find the rebuilding until many centuries later, the parts that were destroyed completely, and which was most of it. So in Numbers 21:21, we read that Israel sent messengers unto Sihon, king of the Amorites, saying, "Let me pass through the land, thy land, and we will not turn into the fields or into the vineyards. We will not drink of the waters of the well, but we will go along by the king's highway until we be past thy borders." And of course, that was Moses' plea to him, but he wouldn't have it. So Sihon would not suffer Israel to pass through his border, but Sihon gathered all his people together and went out against Israel into the wilderness, and he came to Jahaz and fought against Israel. So this is the area. They took the cities. Israel dwelt in the cities of the Ammonites in Heshbon and in all the villages thereof. For Heshbon was the city of Sihon, king of the Amorites. So this was this capital of the Amorite kingdom who had fought against the former king of Moab and taken all his land out of his hand, even unto Arnon. And we're going to go see that in just a moment. And that is Skip. Is that Skip Bartholomew? Is that his name? Josh Bartholomew. Yeah, that's Bart Bartholomew's grandson. Okay. And there's some archways that sort of tie in with our study today. And you can see it's they dig down and they try to get the ruins or the walls of the last civilization, of the last city, of the last people who were living there and dwelling there. But they had to really educate the Arab people about the importance of preserving the ruins and the stones and not moving them until an educated archaeologist came and took a record and mapped it out and made sure everything was right. And then they could, you know, if they didn't like it. But they had to be taught that tourism is about the most lucrative profit that they're going to make in Jordan. Jordan's a very poor country. So they need ways to make money. And so if they'll preserve, people tried to teach them that if you'll preserve your ruins, you can make money by tourists. And tourists will come by and you can sell them postcards. And the problem is we were told not to buy any postcards from the little kids because the kids would get out of school, that they go buy a bunch of postcards and say, one dinar for these postcards. And so they try to sell. And they say if you keep encouraging that, you're enabling them to drop out of school, lose an education, and all they'll do is just try to sell souvenirs to tourists. So that kind of gives you a perspective of where the bus is down here, and we had to walk all the way up, and you had to be in better shape than Sister Wendy and I are today to do this. And over time, the bones start to lock up on you. So. All right, so I've added too many slides on Heshbon, but it gives you an idea of what we're looking at. And this is just an interesting one. Then said Jesus unto them, verily, verily, and I was up on top of Heshbon looking down at this sheepcote. Jesus said unto them, verily, verily, I say unto you, I am the door of the sheep, and all that ever came before me are thieves and robbers, but the sheep did not hear them. I am the door. By me, if any man enter in, he shall be saved and shall go in and out and find pasture. So Jesus is using an illustration of a sheepcote. And this is one that we would see just like this one. So I took some pictures, and I want one of the young people to come up here and point out the door to this sheepfold. This sheepfold or sheepcote was a pen that was made up of these rocks from Heshbon. And some young person, would you like to try, honey? You want to point out the sheep? Where's the door of this place, the door of this fence? What's your name?
Ruth.
Ruth? Come on up. Can you point out where it is? Where's the door? Can you see it? There it is. You got your shadow in the right place. Good, Ruth. Thank you, sweetheart. Good. Okay, she got it. And that's the door. Now, the shepherd would actually sit in the door at night after he got all his sheep inside. And so all his sheep are gathered up, and they're you know, a shady place is prime realty for those sheep. They're all kind of squeezed in there underneath the tin cover. But looking back, you can see that if a shepherd was out, he would keep his sheep from going outside the sheepcote by sleeping inside the door. That's why Jesus said, I am the door. And so he is the door and the shepherd. And he would not let an animal or a wolf come in and take the sheep, nor would he allow the sheep to get out. And so he would sleep by sleeping in that door that you pointed out, Ruth. So it's really an important lesson. And the more you get familiar with the culture of the land and the places, the more the Bible will truly make sense to you. Okay. Now this is Aroer, the town on the edge of the gorge. That's what that word means, Aroer. And that's an enormous gorge looking out from a ledge, and it's actually the River Arnon. You'll find that in your Bible. And there's Wendy and I just taking a picture, and that's Dave and brother Tom Nagel and myself up on the edge, and that's a sunset dropping out over the eastern horizon over the other side of the Arnon. It was actually the border of the tribe of Reuben later on, this deep gorge. So Dibon now is mentioned in Numbers 13, 1 through 5. And he says, now the children of Reuben and the children of Gad had a very great multitude of cattle. And when they saw the land of Jazer and the land of Gilead, that behold, the place was a place for cattle. The children of Gad and the children of Reuben came and spoke to Moses, to Eleazar the priest, said unto the princes of the congregation, saying, Ataroth and Dibon and Jazer and Nimra, Heshbon, Elealeh and Shebam and Nebo and Beon, even the country which Yahweh smote before the congregation of Israel is a land for cattle, and thy servants have cattle. So they wanted this eastern Transjordan highland for their possession. And Moses, of course, chided with them at first and then agreed if their men would go over the Jordan with the others of the children of Israel and conquer the land, he would consent to give them that land. And that's what they did. So the land we're looking at in Jordan, we don't want to forget, just because Jordan has possession of it today, it's like our hymn said, that those desolate and waste places that are now in the hands of Gentiles will soon be handed over to Israel. And as we saw on our map of the cantons that are lined out, it will extend even long past that. This is Diben Fast Food. These are little, what's the name of the little pocket sandwich that you make out of a pita bread. And most of us didn't get off the bus, but there's a handful of brethren, a couple of sisters that did get off the bus and to eat a fast food lunch and falafel sandwich, that's right. And this shepherd was just coming over the hill of Dibon, and Dibon is right behind him in the ruins back here. So we saw that from the bus and made an interesting picture. That's some more of the ruins, a little bit closer of that area, so that city. And we talk about, like I started with the class, these are waste places, desolate places. And the Bible seems to indicate they're going to be built back up as a witness and a testimony to the living Word of God, that these places, you know, when you run across some of these places and the archaeologists say, yeah, this is most likely, because of the evidence and the map and the directions from the Scriptures, the place the Bible talks about, people say, yeah, well, that's your conjecture, may or may not be. But when Christ returns and fulfills that prophecy in Isaiah, and he rebuilds those cities, and men and women who are resurrected from that day, like Moses, says, yep, that's the place, and yep, that's what it looked like, and yep, well, he won't be using that Texas term. But anyway, he'll be saying things like, I confirm by as an immortal that this is the place. So there will be no disputing anymore. Archaeologists can say what they want, but Christ and the administration of the saints will truly be able to identify the waste places, the desolate places, rebuild them into the biblical cities that will now be governed by the faithful saints, kings and priests in that day. So these kind of ruins, they're going to be built up. They're going to be reestablished as a witness to the world, I believe. So interesting, in Dibon, what happened was they found this weird-looking stone. Almost looks like a gravestone, doesn't it? But it's called the Stela of Mesha, King Mesha of Moab. So it's mentioned also as a waypoint, the Dibon and the Israelites in Numbers 33:45. They departed from Lim and pitched in Dibon Gad, according to the Mesha Stele found at the site. Mesha, a Moabite king, expelled the Israelites and established ancient Dibon as an important settlement in the kingdom of Moab around 850 B.C. A priest found that stone, an Arab from Dibon showed him the stone, and it was intact. And he took a rubbing of it, of all of the information on that stone. And it's incredible because it mentions King David and others, but what he thought it was going to be so valuable, they broke it up into pieces and they finally found a few pieces, but today they have it, I believe it's in the Louvre. No, I think it's in the British Museum. But that was one of the most significant places of Dibon besides those things that we mentioned earlier in Scripture. So this is actually some hints on this next one. It's a small fortress built atop a conical hill overlooking the Dead Sea and originally fortified by the Hasmonean King Alexander Janus in 90 BCE, who also fortified Masada. And we're all familiar with Masada, that last battleground of the Jews in AD 70. Let's move on the... I want to go through this with you for a minute, because this next site is kind of interesting. I think you'll find it interesting. It was fortified again. It was destroyed, number three. It was destroyed by the Roman general Gabinius in 57 before the Common Era. And most of you know what BC is. That's what we called BC, and we use that term in relation to before Christ was born. Or A.D., which we would say was after death, which actually means Anno Domini, which means the year of our Lord. But now they use, instead of those terms, they use BCE, which is before common era, to designate the time before Christ. And CE, common era, to designate the time after Christ. Okay, so when you see terms like BCE, 57 BCE, or again fortified by Herod the Great in 30 before the common era, before Christ, Herod the Great fortified this site. So the site we're going to is up on a hill. It's a fortress built up on top of this cone-like hill. And after the death of Herod the Great in 4 BCE, this town, which I actually give you the name of right here, Machaerus. Anybody ever heard of that? Know what that is? Machaerus? It's interesting. I think you'll find it interesting. Some of you may have. And it's after the death of Herod the Great in 4 BCE, Machaerus became part of the inheritance of Herod Antipas for before the common era, 39 years, who imprisoned and executed the prophet Yahya ben Zechariah here, according to Josephus. Now, that's a hint. So who, can you tell me, was the prophet Yahya ben Zechariah? Can you figure that out from the name? John the Baptist. Good, Sam. John the Baptist. Yahya, I would have never guessed as John, right? Yah. Okay, Yahya. Ben is son. So it would have been John, son of Zecharias. Zechariah is Zecharias. So John the Baptist, where do you think John the Baptist was imprisoned and beheaded? How many of you have had the idea that it was in Jerusalem? Nobody? I was the only one. Boy, you people are really smart. Because I had to be schooled in the fact that upon death of Herod Antipas, the fortress passed into the direct control of the Romans, and there's some more history there. But Machaerus, or pronounced or written as Mukawur or Mukawa, is that fortress. And as you read, the fortress built originally by Alexander Janus, and we've already looked at all that. In 70 AD, the fortress was destroyed by the Roman legate Gabinius under the authority of the Emperor Titus. And it gives you a little bit of history and how that the it's been this, the work of uncovering this city or these ruins by the Jordanian or Hashemite Archaeological Society. So Machaerus, this is it. We're driving up to it on the road, and we're going to have to go up a trail. Now, this is kind of the stop where your bus parks on the road, and then you get out, and you follow this step all the way down. And you can see where we're going. We're going down these steps and around, and it actually, I think, goes this way. And it goes up that hill in sort of a circle, so it's not one straight incline. People would not visit it if it were. So it's a gradual incline, right? And so we're going up the hill. Wendy's coming down the hill now, down the steps, and now we're going back up, and I'm taking different shots, but you get up to the top, that's a cistern. And they believe that John the Baptist was actually imprisoned in one of the caves around that hill, and it's just loaded. There's these hollow caves that have been carved out to keep either sheep in or even goods, and ultimately, they believe that this is where Salome may have done her dance. And actually, we aren't even given the name of Herodias' daughter, but we're told by Josephus that it was probably Salome. And this is our group up there on Machawa, or Machaerus. Okay, so here's a few of the, just a few slides of that area where Herod had this fortress built, refortified, and had his feast and parties out in that area. Now, on your map, and I'm not exactly sure, I don't have a map with me, but and I should have one up here in a minute, but this fortress was right across the Jordan from Jerusalem and would have been fortified and provisioned by Herod as sort of a border fortress that he could go to, and this is where Many of the archaeologists believe that John the Baptist was imprisoned and finally beheaded after the Dance of Salome. That's the Dead Sea. You can actually, well, you can see it right from here. You can see how close it is to the Dead Sea. Now, we stayed overnight at the Movenpick, at Petra, and then we took, the next morning, we walked from the Movenpick Hotel down to Petra. And these are just a few shots of the Movenpick. It's just like the other one. Very similar. And so we visited the amazing, what they call the rose-red Nabataean city of Petra, carved out of surrounding sandstone cliffs. And it, from the 2nd century before the Common Era, before Christ, through the 2nd century, so it was about that like 400 years, the Nabataeans controlled the regional caravans from their Petra headquarters. And this was a massive city. And if you've ever seen, I think they used this as a backdrop to the movie. George Harrison was in the Raiders of the Lost Ark. This sandstone city, we had it on the first slide. They even had a sign up there with that advertisement on it. So this is day four of the tour. And you follow this long trail from the hotel all the way down. You get your tickets, you go in, you keep following this trail. You're walking this trail. Or if you don't want to walk, you can ride a horse. They have horses for rent, like $10, or you can ride even in a little cart pulled by a donkey. Yeah, it was pulled by a donkey. And or you can ride a donkey, or you can ride a camel. You've got your choice of any kind of vehicle you want to ride. So the gorge is called S-I-Q. It's like, I guess it's pronounced Sikh. And it's a gorge that's been split by nature through earthquakes, and it's really deep. It's a very deep gorge, and it's not very wide, as you'll see. That last slide gives you just a keyhole view of that rose-red city. It's just sort of a facade is really all it is. It's not even a building that you can go very far into. You can go into it somewhat, but not very far. And I'll give you a better picture of it in a minute. As you go down through this Nabataean city, this ancient kingdom, you can really see how that they were just experts in carving this sandstone. But it wears down real fast because, as you know, sandstone, just what it says, is sand. And too much erosion by the wind and the water, it takes it right down. But much of it has remained in an amazing way. So you can sort of see the depth of this gorge and how small the people are. Some of the Jordanians dress up as guards or Roman guards because the Romans did come in during that period of time and take over that area. And this is the Rose Red City. How many of you ever seen that on a Biblical Archaeological Review magazine or something? Sure you have. It's really quite amazing, that site, and how it was explained, how they built it all. But these are some of the tourists down in here, and they have camels that you can pay the guy $5, and you can sit on the camel, and he'll stand up and get your picture taken. It just, they're making money off the tourists, for sure. Now, that's Wendy and me and Dr. Collins and Becky and Tom in a picture in front of Petra. This cart came roaring down those cobblestones, and those stones were laid by Romans, and so during the Roman Empire. So that was pretty impressive, and most of that road is covered in sand, as you can sort of see in the background here, but they have uncovered a lot of the stones. But when that cart comes rolling across those stones from up further up in the gorge, the echo is deafening. And it sounds just like Gideon's army must have sounded, you know. And when they were fighting the, Midianites, thank you. And it was just deafening, and you're like, I'm going to get run over by this cart. And you jump out of the way, and this guy's just going 30 miles an hour driving this cart with this donkey. I think that's a horse. That's not a donkey. I should know that. I'm from Texas, right? So That was a horse. A lot of them were pulled by donkeys. But here's our group again, looking up at Petra and at the various. And this is Uncle Dave Phillips on a camel, waving to you. I don't have a picture of the restroom, but the restroom was amazing. They had cut into. I think they did this themselves, or it was already carved out. But it had the most beautiful swirls of red and pink and orange and brown. And these swirls were just the rock that had been eroded away by weather. And then they glassed off the areas that where water could come in if it rained. And it was just amazing. So I took my camera in there, and I was filming the roof of the restroom, and a guy walks in and looked at me like, what are you doing, you perv? No, it's not what you think. But it was amazing, and I'm just so impressed by geology and things like that. But here again is the taxi service. That's lunch. It really looks good. It was expensive, and that's what it amounted to. That's a cheese falafel. Two pieces of American cheese and a tortilla. So the trees that would grow there actually grew because the water would come down a fault line from the top of that gorge and just find its way from way up on top, and they would find their way. So this is Petra Hotel. And so let's see, we're going to blast through that, and I think we're about done here, because I don't want to, I'm just going to kind of blast through these. This fifth day, day five, was the Jordan Valley, Decapolis, the 10 towns, and I don't want to wear you out, Jerash. Umkai is Gadara, where Legion was a citizen, Gadara, Gadarenes, and that was just really one of the most beautiful places in Jordan, I thought. And we did have an evening meal there and watched the sun go down over the Sea of Galilee and border crossing into Israel. This is Jordan Valley. As we went north, back up past the Movenpick Hotel that we stayed in originally, and olive yards in Jordan Valley were 12 million olive trees in Jordan. That was one of their major commodities, is that they would press oil, and we saw an oil press, several of them, and the Jordan Valley outcrops, these geological outcrops are seen because all of you know the Jordan River is created by an earthquake fault, a major Jordanic rift fault that runs north and south and created the actual Dead Sea. And so when these two plates are shifting, one to the north, one to the south, that's what creates that depression and that 1,260 feet below sea level, Dead Sea level. So these outcrops and things are quite frequent. This is Jerash, Gerasa, Jerash, and Matt and I are taking pictures of, I think Ruth taking pictures of us. This is Umkai pronounced, and it's Gadara, of the Gadarenes. And really quite an amazing city. A lot of this is Byzantine brickwork or stonework. And amphitheaters were created almost like it was a union team that would go from town to town saying, y'all want an amphitheater? We'll build it for you. Because it was almost identical. In every town, you'd see an amphitheater. It would be about the same thing. And really precise work on the stonework, but they were very similar with the arches and things. Our guy George is walking up the street of Gadara. A view from Gadara looking southwest, and I'm sorry to just be blasting through these, but I don't want to detain you any longer than I have to. Again, the restaurant of this place is right up here on this, between these two arches. This is newer stonework, of course, but we get together at these sites, and either Stephen Collins or Lane on the second week, he joined us only for a week, or George, there was another Jordanian archaeologist, and then Zach was our Jewish or Israeli archaeologist who joined us as a bus guide. And so we had five archaeologists that were either talking while we're riding on the bus, he was talking on a microphone through a PA system that reached all the way to the back of the bus, excuse me, or he Or we would stop and Dr. Collins or George or Zach or Lane Rittmeyer would talk while we were there. So Legion, we were told, might have met Jesus as Jesus came across the Sea of Galilee. This is the Sea of Galilee. And just on the other side of these hills and contours would have been the shoreline where Jesus would have actually gone up or come across the Sea of Galilee and met Legion and healed him. And this is the restaurant at Gadara, and this is a sunset that's seen there. And day six, we went through the Golan. And I think what we're going to do is stop there because we're running. I know we probably have another five or few minutes, but I had some slides of Sodom, but I would explain to you the let me see if I can find that. I'd like to show you those if I could. Are all of you kind of getting worn out and ready to go home? This site is located in what's called the Kikar, K-I-K-K-A-R, Kikar. And it means a circle. It's actually where we get our word, I think, from circle, Kikar, Kikar. And the cities of the plain are the Kikar, where the was a circle of cities right over the northern end of the Dead Sea, where the Jordan comes into the Dead Sea. And that valley is very well known, as Dr. Collins has started to find out. We are now approaching this site where he has, for the last eight seasons, for 6 weeks out of the year, he brings in a team of men and women who pay their own way and pay for the hotel there at the Mobenpick where we stayed. And then they go out every day and they dig in this tall El Hammam, is what it's called. And if you ever want to do this, you can. All you got to do is just contact him, and you got the funds, and you go over there. But these are potsherds in that area that they have dug out, and they throw away most of everything and that people hang on to. And these are potsherds from various ages all the way back to the time of Abraham, the Iron Age, the Bronze Age, I'm sorry. So the Bronze Age is the time of Abraham, and he has uncovered a massive city that he believes was actually the site of Sodom. And his evidence is overwhelming. I mean, there's just no way that any archaeologist could refute what he has uncovered in this vast city complex. It's got an upper city and a lower city, and he's dug into this area that shows you ramparts that were built back in the days of Abraham of the Bronze Age with mud brick and not with stone. His stone came later when during the Iron Age they had the tools to chisel stones out of the quarries and to chisel them, make walls, and embed those walls and build stone walls, not during Abraham's time. During Abraham's time, they know that these mud brick ramparts were... Now, that is a fly. You see that fly? That's a fly. And those things were atrocious. You're always doing this the whole time. It was everywhere. And so I happened to catch that off a video snag, right? I saw that fly through there and I caught him. I wanted to show you that. But anyway, now he's showing you that rampart. And this stone wall compared to this wall over here, this is mud brick behind him. And he's explaining the difference in this stone wall, and which is Iron Age and field stones, and you can see the cuttings and how they're shaping these stones and to build these vast walls. And what's amazing is that Lot, he explains, came up when he left Abram. He came up and he would have dealt with, in those days they were called shepherds, and there was a shepherd I'm losing the term. But these shepherds that had large groups of employees like Lot had, the reason he had to separate from Abram, remember? He moved down towards Sodom, and he would have set up out in that plain, and some of these pictures you'll see the view of the plain behind. You can see that one. You see the plain back here? Well, that's where Lot would have set up between, and he became the first line of defense for the King Bera of Sodom. And so King Bera would say, yeah, you can graze your sheep out there on the condition, and he would tell this to all shepherds who came up, that you fight the enemy who comes in to take us first. And so when the five kings of Chedorlaomer and others would from the east came in to fight, that's who they hit first, was Lot. That's why they took him captive, is because he was down there as sort of a protective barrier to, as well as other shepherds. They were the suburban shepherds. And so Lot would have actually, that's why he was taken captive, and King Bera was still on site, remember, when Abraham and Melchizedek met and the king of Sodom came. So that was really quite an interesting education. And Dr. Collins was real good about explaining all of these areas. And this particular area, that particular site, just that last slide, was he pitched me a stone that came off of the, he said it came off of the floor of what he believed was a palace that belonged to King Bera and was the clay, fired clay tile, like bricks. They make them out of red clay, and then they fire them, and they make them real strong. That's what you build your houses out of. Well, he had believed they had uncovered the floor of the palace of King Bera, and I'm not sure how that would have escaped the cataclysmic destruction of Sodom when God destroyed it. But he believes he's dug down when we left the top of this tall and went further and further down, and you'll see slides of this later. We went all the way down, and he said, now this area down here dates farther back to the time of Abraham. And so when he's explaining the dig and how they had found this level, in his slideshow he actually presented the night before we went out here to Tal Hamam, he was showing us how that they found the bones of people that were bent back as though when they were running that they were just extended and destroyed on the spot with a very, very sudden blast. And that the way the bones were bent showed that there must have been a cataclysmic like a volcano or a meteorite or something that destroyed that area. And the whole level was ashes, dark ashes down there on that very, very low level. So this again is up in the upper city of King Bera's palace, and this is where the floor tiles were found, and all that pottery, all the little potsherds that were in that big pile, all of this is just indisputable evidence that this was one of the major cities, Sodom being one, Gomorrah, and the other sister cities, I believe Adma was one, Zeboam was one. That's the piece of clay pottery that he tossed to me and said, here, take that home. I did. I meant to bring it, forgot it. You know, I'm sorry about that. But it just basically is a real, real hard clay tile, flat. Another thing that I did secure from the site here, as you'll see in a moment, the whole group was, we were just fascinated by it, and he of course welcomed donations to the dig showing it, but he's, like I say, he's worked 7-8 years on just the physical dig. The Jordanians during the Six-Day War actually took a bulldozer. There's a slide of that plain area, and we're coming down now off of that top hill at the very top and far back of that area. And again, I don't know how, I'll have to ask him how he believes that that could have possibly been the cat palace of Bera upon thinking about it, because Bera would have been destroyed later by the same judgment that God brought down. And that's me down there digging out a bottle of dust from the level of that ashes area below during Abraham's day of the Bronze Age. And so I got a little bit of that to bring home. And Let's see, what else is there? I think that's about it. This is, again, back down in Jordan. It's over the Jordan River on the eastern side in Jordan, and the Hashemite Kingdom of Jordan is helping to sponsor his dig. He's showing us levels of the mud brick and where it picks up and then where it continues with the stone of the Iron Age after Abraham's day. He says that he has found evidence that once Sodom was destroyed, that people considered that place to be a curse and never rebuilt on it again after about 800 years. For 800 years, they just did not go back. They were just traumatized through superstition or whatever. But you can get an idea of the immense size of the city of Sodom and what all he's uncovered. So he's continuing to uncover various ruins, bones, pottery, you name it. And so, question, do you think Sodom will be rebuilt according to what Jesus says? And what's the verse? And I'm trying to remember. I should have written it down. It would be more tolerable for Sodom in the day of judgment. And Sodom didn't even exist in Jesus' day, did it? Than for thee, I think he said, Chorazin. So, it's interesting. Will that city be rebuilt? Will these five cities where Lot dwelt in, sat in the gate of Sodom? It's kind of interesting, isn't it, that this is being uncovered at the time where just before Christ comes. It's sort of like the Dead Sea Scrolls were discovered at the time the year before Israel became a nation. And or was it the year after? 49? Israel became a nation in 49, right? 48. And they found the Dead Sea Scrolls in 49. So I hope you enjoyed these. I realize that we didn't get to cover anything on the Israeli side, but I wanted to show you Jordan side, and maybe another time we get together we can show some more on the Israeli side. Thank you for your attention. I know it's been a long day for you, but I hope you got a little bit out of this, and if you ever get the opportunity to go on a Bible Land Expedition tour, I strongly encourage you to do so. It'll far exceed your expectations. Thank you.